Any intentional forward movement of his hands starts a forward pass, even if the player loses possession of the ball as he is attempting to tuck it back towards his body. Also, if the player has tucked the ball into his body and then loses possession, it is a fumble.
Like, I got over the tuck rule, but I still think about the tuck rule.
Do you not believe the tuck rule was appropriately applied?
I do not. I do not.
Hey, people. It's the tuck rule yet again. We're not dead yet. Here I am.
Our haters have tried to kill us, though. So,
our haters are sick. You may even say that we have some assassins, perhaps of the pole variety. It is I, Victoria, here yet again. I'm a little under the weather. I don't know if you can tell that by my voice, but I cannot string two thoughts together. But that's okay. And I'm joined by Katie. What's up, Katie?
Not much. I should say I can barely string, like, one thought together, so even with your brain restrictor plate, you're doing better than me.
Dear God, how are we going to get through this?
Who knows?
Katie, I was thinking about joke ways to start us off today. We have, like, a little mini segment here at the start because of an insane story that broke on Monday night. I don't think that any possible riff can be funnier than what actually happened.
No. So, not even close.
If you have the tweet in front of you, I would like you to just do a accurate account of what transpired, presumably in Austin, over the weekend.
So, Jeff Banks is the special teams coach for Texas. He's also the associate head coach. This Halloween, obviously, it's a big old neighborhood. There are probably kids that want to go to that neighborhood because, obviously, it would be where the candy is. We end up with this situation where a kid ends up going to a place that he probably shouldn't have. And he got bit by his, what I can only describe as his, stripper wife's, emotional support monkey.
That's such a good string of words together. So the original thing that breaks is that Texas Longhorn special teams coach Jeff Banks' monkey allegedly attacked or seriously hurt a young trick-or-treater. The monkey's jaws apparently had to be pried off the small child, which is a horrifying sentence. But then, after that, in the thread, you get that Jeff Banks left his wife and kids to be with a stripper named Pole Assassin, which is just a brilliant stripper name. I don't think you can get better than Pole Assassin, frankly. Who has been on Jerry fucking Springer. And if you
fucking
go,
Kojima ass character from fucking your solid ass name.
Dear God. So, first of all, the tweet from the Jerry Springer account of the Pole Assassin doing her routine is still up. You can still find it. I watched it. She has a pet monkey who was part of her stripping act. She appears to be retired now, or at least that's what people online seem to think. So now it's an emotional support monkey, and the family ran an unlicensed haunted house out of their house. And apparently their monkey bit a kid. And
yeah.
I think, so this breaks, and then Mrs. Pole Assassin begins to post through it.
You know what? I respect anyone that sees a problem, sees, oh, maybe I should get off here, and then just immediately decides to abandon that notion and just starts tweeting everything. Just replying to literally everyone that is like, hounding her at this point. I'll say it like that, but, you know, it's the internet. But she, like, goes in depth. She walks people, like, through, like, the haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's, like, a fucking pool. like, next to this fucking haunted house that some kid could have fallen in, for one. So it's not very safe, but I was thinking about this more than anything else. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall of the woman that was left by that guy.
Yep. So here is the other thing about this coach, which, like, if you remember years ago when the Dolphins offensive line coach, when a vengeful ex-lover leaked a video of him doing coke and just being a, like, really weird, just saying very strange sexual things. Jeff Banks is a very well-respected coach. He has the Saban shine on him. So he was the tight end special teams coach for Saban these last 2 years. He follows Sark from Alabama to Texas, and he was mentioned as being someone that Washington State could look towards to hire for their head coaching job because he's a Washington State alum. He was a punter there. Honestly, like, just an unbelievable series of events here. This broke, like, late Monday night during a very boring Monday Night Football game, and it very quickly became the only thing that the internet cared about.
My friend had that fucking, like, he tweeted that fucking picture of that monkey that's, like, neuron activation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Like
college football Twitter tonight.
I saw that. I think Matt Brown of Extra Points had the tweet in which he said that he finally that there was finally a monkey NFT that he would buy. So yeah.
Oh my god.
What a story. I'm going to go ahead and say that this is still a developing story and that there's a chance that we will come back to this later on.
I have no words. I went to the fucking Texags thread.
Yes. Oh my god, that must have been unbelievable.
I have never seen boomers more confounded over just like, so, you know, it starts with them talking about, oh, well, you know, he's classless, like Texas is classless. That's obvious. It went into some pretty weird corners. Like, why do all women want fat asses? And then there was like another guy who was like, have y'all heard about this song called I'm in Love with a Stripper?
What I obvious. So what I love about that is that he was an assistant coach for Texas A&M under Kevin Sumlin for 5 years. He was the interim coach after Kevin Sumlin got fired. So he has head coached a game. He lost a Belk Bowl.
Never lose a Belk Bowl, folks.
Never.
You'll have your stripper wife's emotional support monkey bite a child 5 years later.
Oh Lord. And he lost that Belk Bowl to a 7-5 Wake Forest team. So just, oh no. But I guess speaking of college football, speaking of Wake Forest, things of that nature, there is actual football, regrettably, that we have to talk about. And Wake Forest is actually topical, so we aren't going to start there, but Katie, why don't you start running us through some of the scores that we should know from this week?
Okay, so we'll get to the important stuff first, like in terms of the playoff picture. The cocktail party between Georgia and Florida, this was not interesting at all, except for a fun 12-play sequence at the end of the first half, where Georgia was only up 3-0, and then 12 plays later, they were up 24-0 going into halftime. It was extremely boring. This is the most joyless football team I've seen this side of Bill Belichick. Number two, Cincinnati, 31, Tulane, 12. If you're Cincinnati, you probably didn't need this game. Cincinnati was only up 14-12 at half, and this Tulane team is 1-8. It's probably their worst team in a decade. It just, I am preemptively mad. I know that this is going to drop on Wednesday, so maybe this take will already be outdated. I can't wait for the playoff committee to screw Cincinnati. It's going to make me so fucking mad.
They're going to drop at number five, I think. That's my official prediction. They will either be 4, 5, or 6.
Yeah, that seems about right. And that is what the committee does. But anyways, before I go on with that, number four, Oklahoma, 52, Texas Tech, 21. Sonny Cumbie's debut as Texas Tech head coach didn't go so well. The Sooners put up 541 yards of total offense. And Caleb Williams continues to be just absolutely absurd. 23 of 30 for 402 yards and 6 touchdowns. I don't even know where to start with the guy. So, the primetime game between two ranked teams, number 5, Ohio State 33, Penn State 24. Penn State actually, they gave a good account of themselves. I thought that Sean Clifford looked okay-ish. It was 7-3 Penn State until 4 minutes to go in the second half. C.J. Stroud hits a throw over the top of the coverage to Olave for a touchdown. And then a 57-yard strip sack fumble return for a touchdown by a guy weighing 320 pounds.
It's kind of so beautiful.
Obviously, on the Tuck Rule, we support big guy touchdowns. I am conflicted that it is an Ohio State big guy touchdown. Mm-hmm. But eventually, Ohio State starts to break away, and they win, and they had 466 yards of total offense against the top 20 team. Unfortunately, this means probably that Ohio State's offense is most definitely fixed. So we get to another primetime game. Ole Miss 20, number 18 Auburn 31. Auburn was just in a different league, and Ole Miss's defense at this point is just a liability. Tank Bigsby, I think, had 140 carries and one, or 140 yards and one touchdown. Be wild if he had 140 carries. he just had all this room to run through. I mean, you could have driven a truck through some of these holes. And Matt Corral actually got hurt in this game. They had a true freshman taking snaps for a little bit, but it didn't really matter. Auburn was just in a different league. So Ole Miss not looking so hot the second half of the year. And finally, in terms of her games, number 13, Wake Forest, 45, Duke 7. Wake off to their first 8-0 start in program history. 677 yards of total offense against Duke. I love this team. What more can I say other than I just absolutely love how this team plays? They're just so fun to watch. So the top six, and the reason I choose the top six for this week instead of top 10 or top five is, top six is usually how the playoff committee kind of presents the teams when they make their selection. So the top six would be number 1, Georgia, number 2, Cincinnati, number 3, Alabama, number 4, Oklahoma, number 5, Michigan State. It actually mattered that they beat Michigan, but we'll get into that. And number 6, Ohio State. And there are two other notables. Wake is top 10 for the first time ever, and our UTSA Roadrunners are 16. What a grand world we live in.
Shout out to UTSA. I hope that the College Football Playoff Committee ranks them. I'm slightly worried that they're just going to drop them out and not say anything. I hope that I'm wrong.
It did happen to Marshall for a long time back in 2014, which was the first year. Marshall, I think, was like 12-0, and they were only ranked like 23rd. It was just...
To be fair, UTSA has not played anyone. The best win is Memphis, right? Probably. I don't know. We don't have to, like, the COSA is sad enough right now. I don't think we need to take more digs at Conference USA.
So, I know Victoria has imposed a no Big Ten rule for this podcast, but I'm actually going to break it because there was an actual good game.
I can't even pretend to be mad that we're talking about the Big Ten, because this game was rocket fuel.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was. And the wild thing is that I think the hero of the first half, anyways, was a guy that didn't have a single catch coming into this game. Andrell Anthony, freshman from East Lansing, who Fox commentators very much decided to work in very, very gratuitously, took a pass pretty early on, 93 yards to the house by basically outrunning everyone. He eventually finished with 6 catches for 155 yards and 2 TDs. This game really did lend itself to making legends out of it. But anyways, the first half is fun. Michigan and Michigan State, they go back and forth. 13-7 Michigan, then it's 14-13 Michigan State. And then Michigan kicks a couple of late field goals to make it 23-14 at half. It starts to get a little worse for Michigan State because Michigan extends their lead to 30-14. But in comes Kenneth Walker III. This man is a badass. That's the only thing I can say about him. He's a total badass. Victoria.
Yes.
Do you want to know how he did after Michigan made it 30-14?
I think I know, but I would love for you to tell everyone.
He went for 7 carries for 100 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Is that good?
That's very good. If you haven't seen this guy play, and honestly, if you're a Tuck Rule listener, you probably have, but this dude jump cuts like nobody I've ever seen. He has such good vision. But anyways, Michigan State starts to come back. It's 30-14, but that's still a 2-possession lead if you hit 2 2-point conversions. And that's exactly what Michigan State did. They scored 2 touchdowns, hit 2 2-point conversions. It's 30-30 with 12:30 left in the game. I got hit with a little flashback on like the turning point for this game. So Michigan uses a 2-quarterback system, and their backup, J.J. McCarthy, was in. Although J.J. McCarthy's used more in run situations, like a zone read guy. So he ends up messing up the mesh point and fumbling. And Michigan State goes on to recover the ball, and they end up scoring the game-winning touchdown. I say this kind of takes a little bit of a trip for memory lane for me, because obviously as a Tennessee fan, none of us forget 1998, but I think the key pivotal point in that year was the Clint Sterner stumble and fumble that led to us like saving our asses against Arkansas that year and allowed us to win the national title. I'm not saying Michigan State's going to do the same thing. I'm just saying. It was 33 Michigan at that point, or 33-30 Michigan at that point. It ends up being 37-33. Michigan State gets a pretty clutch win, and they are firmly in the playoff race now. I will say the one funny thing is, if I give you the stats for this game, Michigan absolutely won it. Mm-hmm. Michigan had 552 yards of total offense to Michigan State's 395. Michigan had 406 passing yards to 196 for Michigan State. Yards per play, 6.7 Michigan, 6.0 Michigan State. And the thing is that usually when a game is like this, turnover margin ends up playing a factor. But it was negligible because each team had 2 turnovers apiece, so it didn't really matter all that much. But anyways, that was the game of the week. I know I didn't expect this game to be as good as it was.
I mean, yeah, it was. I kind of thought that it would be boring because Michigan State was there. Sorry, Michigan State. I know that it isn't D'Antonio Michigan State anymore, but still, I kind of think that there's usually some residual Michigan State-ness. And I guess there was, in that they can't really throw the ball and that they have a brilliant running back. It feels like that's normal. Yep. Old, like the Michigan State of my youth, you know.
Oh god,
because
I am old.
Yeah,
I'm so old.
I mean, I kind of grew up on like let me throw out a name, Javon Ringer. How about that?
Oh yeah, that's a name.
So like, I kind of expect Michigan State to have these ridiculously awesome running backs because they had Le'Veon too. So Kenneth Walker III, by the way, one of the best football names, I think. You like, it is so good. First of all, weird first name, Kenneth. What is it with football players being named Kenny or Kenneth this year? There's like multiple Heisman contenders named Ken, which is just strange and weird. But also Kenneth Walker the Third, as a total package, is just such a good running back name.
And a very good running back. 23 carries, 197 yards, and 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, just badass.
Just hello Heisman. So
how about a different very prolific game that meant nothing, was total nonsense, made no sense, and was pretty emotional for at least one of the sides. We're talking about BYU Virginia. Virginia's head coach, Bronco Mendenhall, used to be the head coach over at BYU, and BYU was up 21-0 real early. This is one of those games where I think just reading out the drive chart is fun. I feel like I do this once a week, and I'm going to do it right here, right now. You can't stop me. Virginia's going to go first. So we're starting off with Virginia and then BYU, and then obviously we're going to trade it pretty much all the way. Punt, touchdown, interception, touchdown, punt, touchdown. So that's 21-0. Touchdown, 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 punt, touchdown, field goal, touchdown, punt, touchdown, 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 end of half. So at this point, it's Virginia 42, BYU 38.
I think it's funny that there were 80 points this half, and that's the most in an FBS game this year. We're over 800 total yards in this half.
Yep.
Just
also, Virginia immediately gets itself in a 21-point hole and goes into halftime up by 4 points. Does. And here's the thing. Virginia's only going to score 7 more points. So, like, they got a whole game's worth of offense in very quickly. At this point, BYU gets the ball at half, and it goes touchdown, punt, missed field goal, touchdown, touchdown, fumble, touchdown, interception, touchdown, downs, end of game. So it gets a little normal after halftime, or it gets like slightly more normal anyway. But still, BYU had 734 yards of offense in this game. Virginia had 588. BYU had 385 rushing yards.
Yep, Tyler Allgeier. 29 carries, 266 yards, and 5 touchdowns, and they kept feeding him in the fourth quarter.
Both teams averaged more than 8 yards a carry. That's insane.
I am looking at the quarterback stats for this game, BYU is actually not that much of a passing team. Like, they like to, like I feel like Kalani Sitake isn't, like, from the BYU mold where he, like, has this drop back passing attack that's prolific, except for last year when, you know, they obviously had Zach Wilson and a really good offensive line that could block. But Jaren Hall hasn't been quite as prolific this year. He passed for nearly 350 and 3 touchdowns. Brennan Armstrong usually doesn't get outpassed in a game. He just had 337. Just, you know. I also think it's cool that Virginia just has, like, a random, like, wild card guy that does everything who wears the number 99.
It rocks.
That's really fun. That's like, so good.
ESPN lists him as a quarterback, which is really funny. And I think they list him as a quarterback because Virginia insists on listing him as FBP, football player. That game was a total tire fire. BYU is ready to join the Big 12 if they're going to put up these ridiculous shootouts. Speaking of ridiculous bonfire games, Houston SMU.
The fun thing about these two teams playing is that both of these quarterbacks are just flirting on the edge of disaster every play. Clayton Tune and Tanner Mordecai just an unbelievable pairing of football guys who, damn the consequences, they're just going to throw it. Tanner Mordecai makes more off his back foot throws to guys that should be picked off but are actually completed more than I've ever seen. In Clayton Toon, he's fun to watch too. He's a good scrambling quarterback, but somehow these just ridiculous scrambles that he does. It feels like he scrambles for like 5 seconds each time, but in the end, he always finds some guy over the deep middle. It ended up being 23-20 Houston at half. Both of these teams kind of they kind of battle back and forth the whole way, and it ends up 37-37 with about 30 seconds to go. I know commentators kind of do this all the time, but just before the kickoff, the commentator says, if you kick it to this guy, hold the phone, because he has 8 career kickoff returns for touchdowns. And so SMU kicked it to him, and he went 102 yards for a walk-off touchdown on a kick return.
Incredible. Incredible.
It is funny. Both of these quarterbacks ended up combining for over 700 yards. Clayton Toon, 27 of 37 for 412 and 4 TDs. Tanner Mordecai of SMU, 24 of 37 for 305 and 3 touchdowns. This was a very classic American Conference shootout game between two teams that I would say that they don't like each other, but SMU's beef is more with TCU than it is Houston. So, but it is still a really fun game to note. I am going to be a total sicko and pay Victoria back for making me talk about Bowling Green, Minnesota earlier on this year by talking about Wisconsin, Iowa. I promise I won't spend too much time on this. There's not much to say. I mean, Wisconsin wins 27-7 over this team that a couple weeks ago everyone had in playoff conversation.
Iowa's offense is like next level. What the fuck is going on? Bad.
You know, it pisses me off too. They have the best center in college football in Tyler Linderbaum. They never pull him. They never get him involved in the run game. They don't even seem to really want to run behind him. That's the thing I hate about Kirk Ferentz teams in general. It's not just that they have this power run style of offense. It's that they do it in the most boring way imaginable. They don't even run power and counter. It's just inside and outside zone all the time. And Tyler Goodson is actually a pretty good back, but somehow he can't fucking run because they haven't schemed well enough. So Wisconsin had a 20-0 lead at the half. Iowa's first half drives, 6 punts, 2 fumbles. Only one of those lasted longer than 3 plays. I actually got in depth with this. Iowa's total first half production was 23 plays for 17 yards. That's 2 feet 3 inches per play. If you roll over in your bed, if you have a particularly spacious bed, not mine.
I was about to say, I definitely do not.
If you could roll over in your bed if you were rich and get more and go further than that. This game was just ugly. 270-156 in terms of total yards in favor of Wisconsin, which I noted feels like a Madden game with default 5-minute quarters. It's bad. Oh, Minnesota. Oh, it always comes back full circle. Minnesota has the Minnesota has the Big Ten West division lead. And Wisconsin is a game behind them. So
yep. And they lost to Bowling Green, which, hey, no shame. Buffalo just lost to Bowling Green, so I don't think I'm in a position to talk shit. Minnesota controls its own destiny to Indianapolis. And at this point, it's either them or Wisconsin, right? Out of the West?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is. I know Wisconsin and Minnesota play each other on November 27th in Minneapolis. I did want to note one thing about Bowling Green, though. Their coach, Scott Loeffler, I think was out. I don't know if he got fired, but he was out for the game.
He got ejected midway through for unsportsmanlike conduct.
Okay, well, apparently the offense just took an immediate step up after he left. I think that's extremely funny. I think one last thing I will note before I hand it off to you for the weekly Presbyterian corner is Nebraska's absolutely snake bitten. It's extremely funny that this team is 2-6 against FBS opponents, but their point differential per game is like they're over 5 points a game better on average than their opponents, but they're 2-6. It's funny also because they lost 28-23 to Purdue. They're 3-6 on the year in total. Their post-game win expectancy, according to Bill Connolly, was 93%. They're just... They find a way to keep losing close games, and Scott Frost is fucked. So, that's all I have to say about that. So, Victoria, what the fuck did Presbyterian do this week?
Nothing good. I think that we're pretty well used to that. Just... Every week, we take a look at the Presbyterian Blue Hose of the Non-Scholarship Pioneer League because they hired the no-punt high school coach, Kevin Kelly. So I kind of think that the no-punt approach, and this is no reflection of how Presbyterian has done this year, by the way. I've always thought that it's kind of bullshit. Like, sometimes you do, like... Football players are not robots, and if you get yourself in a big hole early, they're gonna hate it. But this was not a no-punt afternoon for Presbyterian, so I guess it's kind of a wash.
Oh, gosh.
Stetson! Stetson!
Betrayal!
The Stetson Hatters, yeah. Presbyterian, my Blue Hose, got beat up by a team of walking hats, 56-14. Ren Heffley goes 25 for 40 for 197 yards, one touchdown and three picks. And Presbyterian's kicker punted three times in this game. I'm not going to try and say his name because
he deserves no honor nor glory on this podcast.
Yep. Three punts for 104 yards. It would probably be a good idea to punt a little bit more so your team doesn't completely quit on you. Yeah, I am at a point where I'm just disappointed in Presbyterian.
I have a fun little thing for you. Presbyterian apparently won this matchup 26-3 back in April when the FCS had the spring season. So, let's fall off. This season is coming to an end for Presbyterian. They only have three games left. Thank God. Anyways, Victoria, I will hand it off to you because the NFL had some fun things that happened this week. I know that.
Yeah, this was actually a pretty great week of NFL football, which is good because it's kind of been a weird few weeks lately. I think this year the problem is that the league's very top-heavy and bottom-heavy. Like, there's a lot of really bad teams at the bottom, and there's a lot of very overpowered teams at the top. And it just makes for there not being a lot of interesting football, but this week was pretty good. I'm just going to start off with Bills 26, Dolphins 11. This game sucked. We don't really have to talk about it other than I want to shame Miami. This is the worst that I've seen the Bills play since 2018. They play, like, for the first 2.5 quarters of this game, like, it was 3-3 deep into the third quarter. The Bills did nothing. Like, they were playing awful. I was sick and losing my mind and, like, just tweeting absolutely insane things. So the game is tied 3-3 towards the end of the second quarter. Miami has the ball in the red zone. They have an opportunity to score. Mike Gesicki gets sent in jet motion. They're very versatile and good tight end, gets set in jet motion, and the snap hits his ass. The Bills fall on it. And they get bailed out of having to make a red zone stop. And that was just kind of how the day went for Miami. Honestly, at this point, probably the sickos game of the year for the NFL is this upcoming week, and that's the 1-7 Dolphins taking on the 1-7 Texans. We are currently recording on Tuesday morning. There is a slim chance that by the time this podcast comes up that the Dolphins will have traded for Deshaun Watson. I don't think it's going to happen, but it certainly might. However, in the 99% chance that it doesn't happen, Dolphins fans are just going to be fucking furious this whole week. And then they have to play those Texans? It's going to be great. I really don't like the Dolphins. Their fans are evil. I would much, like, pretty much Bills, Jets, and Patriots fans are all, like allied against Dolphins fans just because they're so obnoxious. So I delight in their suffering, and, yeah, this was a wretched game.
I saw the highlights, and the only thing I could take away is Tua has no time to throw, and he will be David Carr'd into the plane of quarterbacks that could have been good but ended up very bad.
Yeah, I mean, like, their whole offense, it's just these, like, really slow-developing, gross RPOs, and it's like, if you gave, like, if you put Tua in the current Patriots offense, and I think Josh McDaniels is not a very good offensive coach, but if you put him in the Patriots offense, he'd probably be fine. But instead, they just have him doing this weird Chan Gailey residual bullshit. They have co-offensive coordinators because they didn't want to hire one from outside after Chan Gailey left. It's bad. It's bad. Brian Flores should probably lose his job. I'm not sure if that'll happen, but anyway. Steelers 15, Browns 10. This game, Browns fans were thrilled because Mayfield, Landry, and Beckham finally got to play together for the first time in almost a whole year, and Beckham had one catch for 6 yards on one target. That was just kind of the day it was.
I saw where the Steelers got their fucking kicker hurt on a fucking fake field goal.
Yeah. That was great.
What the fuck?
Yeah. That honestly should have been roughing the passer. I feel like they didn't call it because it was the kicker, but in that moment, he's the passer. That should be roughing the passer. But the Steelers, against all odds, are 4-3, and the Browns are currently in last place in the AFC North. So, oh boy. Wait, you're telling me that the Browns failed to live up to preseason playoff expectations? That's fucking crazy.
Damn, Victoria, just dancing on their fucking grave, why don't you?
I don't like Baker Mayfield. Like, I really don't like Baker Mayfield. Anyway, Eagles 44, Lions 6. I appear to have miscalculated when I said that we could get Danny Soups a win this week. I watched none of this game. The score is here, so I can mention that the Eagles obliterated the Lions. I thought the Lions were better than this.
I think eventually when you lose so much, the dam just breaks. Even if your coach is good at keeping your players' morale up like Dan Campbell is, eventually the dam's going to break, and that's what happened here. I didn't watch this game, obviously. The Eagles finally stopped trying to make Jalen Hurts throw the football, so good for them.
Patriots 27, Chargers 24. This game is weird. Justin Herbert did not have a good game. He's 18 for 35, 223 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. The Patriots defense, or at least their pass rush, looks good. The one signing that they made over the offseason that I was terrified about as a Bills fan was Matthew Judon, and he's just playing out of his mind this year. He's a really good player. Christian Barmore had a nice game. He was their second-round pick, I believe. A really good defensive lineman out of Bama. But the Patriots still don't do anything on offense that I'm, like, scared about. Mac Jones didn't do much of anything. Damien Harris is a really good running back. But, yeah, the Patriots, they got a pick six off Herbert in a pretty crucial moment in, I believe, either the early fourth quarter or late third quarter of this game. That kind of like, put things out of reach. The Chargers score a late touchdown and make it look a little more respectable, but yeah. So the Patriots are 4-4, but I'm not overly impressed by any of their wins. Like, obviously the Chargers are a good team, but other than that, they've beat the Jets twice and they beat the Texans. I think the Patriots are probably gonna be where they were last year, where they have some weirdly good games, but they win 7 or 8 games. Like, I'm not overly concerned about them. I think they probably would be better off if they kept Cam Newton. Maybe he should have gotten vaccinated. And
maybe
Monday night, I'm mostly bringing this up because both these teams looked embarrassing. Chiefs 20, Giants 17. Man, whatever is wrong with the Chiefs has not been figured out yet. Obviously some of it's bad luck. Like, Patrick Mahomes goes 29 for 48 for 275, one touchdown, one pick. The pick is, like, comically not his fault. Like,
yeah, it's like a fucking pinball interception in the end zone. It just...
Yeah, which, obviously, that's not on him, but just none of the timing looks right. Like, and when you watch him play, it looks like he's forgotten just how to be, like, a normal, steady quarterback. Like, he is trying to do too much at all times because that's worked for him in the past, and it just isn't working this year.
I think there's an interesting schematic thing that's happened. So the one thing I did note from this game last night, and I was too busy with monkey stuff to fucking watch it too much. There was one graphic or one replay footage angle that they showed where the Giants had just dropped in like just straight drop zone cover four. Like it was fucking like they're playing fucking prevent defense. And when Mahomes can't take shots, he starts to get nervous.
Yeah.
He likes cover three because cover three essentially turns into man to man when you have to get the receiver down the field. And teams are now playing a lot of two high against the Chiefs. Usually the solution, like I said last night on Twitter, is to run the ball. Patrick Mahomes is obviously a very good runner. You could put him in the zone read, which I think the Chiefs did try a little bit. But overall, there's a schematic thing that I think Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid have to figure out if the Chiefs are going to get back to their winning ways. So that's the only thing interesting I have to contribute. So,
I do think that it's really interesting that like teams this year have had success basically doing like air raid beaters to the Chiefs in terms of like sometimes the Giants would just drop eight into coverage and rush three and just say, fucking do something about it. And Mahomes just, yeah, like the shots weren't there. I think you said that he looked like Texas Tech Mahomes.
Yeah. He presses too much and he doesn't take the check down. That's yeah.
After the game, Joe Judge said that there's been persistent headset issues, and then that's why for eight games now he's been making really mind-bogglingly weird timeout decisions. So that's where the Giants are at. That their head coach is an idiot and can't even take responsibility. So you put on here that you wanted to mention Packers Cardinals. This was a pretty good game this week. It was close. The Packers end up winning it, but anyway.
Yeah, these are the two best teams in the NFL, or well, two of the three or four best teams in the NFL. I'd put the Rams up there too. I wanted to mention this game because Aaron Rodgers threw more fucking little dump throws and little quick screens underneath than I've ever seen. They just said, we don't have any healthy receivers aside from Randall Cobb and Amari Rodgers and whoever the fuck else that they trotted out there. It was
Juwan. Hey, respect to Juwan Winfrey, please.
Yeah, they did use him. It's really funny. And I think the Cardinals too, their defense is kind of weird because they want to get their edge rushers out a little bit. But what this does is it creates gaps in the defensive zone. And the Packers were able to kind of run a little bit. I thought AJ Dillon looked, he's a great back, I think, in terms of staying up on his feet. In Green Bay kept playing. Green Bay actually used a little bit of too high in this game to keep Arizona's like offense from getting anything. I feel like I don't want to get into too much of a schematic discussion, but Green Bay kept playing quarters and quarter half. Quarters is a pretty normal defense. Basically, the corner reads like the number one receiver, and the safety reads the number two receiver, and you either take them vertical if they go deep, or you just hand it off to the linebackers if they stay underneath. Quarter half is when the defense, it's when there are two safeties deep on one side of the field like it's cover four, and the half is there's one guy covering the deep half like it's cover two. And Green Bay actually limited Arizona quite a bit with that strategy. But eventually Arizona got things going, and it was, I think the real interesting thing starts to happen with about 10 minutes to go. Cardinals finally make it 24-21. Green Bay still in front. The Packers then go on a pretty long offensive drive. And it's really fun to see them snapping the ball at like two, even with like 7 or 6 minutes to go. But eventually this drive ends with a goal line stand at the 1 yard line. And even with 99 yards to go, 3 minutes and 23 seconds left for this Cardinals offense, you don't want to give them that. So mm-hmm. they hit a couple plays down the field. And then ended up in field goal range, and you think, oh, well, the game may go to overtime, but they're going to take one shot.
Lord.
That one shot is disastrous.
Uh-huh. AJ Green, what are you doing, man?
He doesn't look for the ball at all. He is not concerned with mortal, things of this mortal coil, such as where the fucking football is on this fucking fade route that's supposed to be, a really safe option. Green Bay picks it off.
Hell of a pick, by the way. Rasul Douglas, this was kind of a crazy play by him. Douglas is a perfectly good player who seems to be bouncing around right now. He was on the Cardinals practice squad just a few weeks ago. So, good for him. I'm sure that feels great for Rasul Douglas. So, just good for him. Good player.
Yeah. And the Packers defense did pretty well. They held DeAndre Hopkins to 2 catches. But they only targeted him twice. That was fun. I did note the Packers had a motley crew of guys catching passes with their top receivers all hurt. And Robert Tonyan also hurt, tore his ACL, out for the year. This is getting very, very bad.
Yeah.
I said we even get a Mercedes Lewis target like it's 2010.
He was the San Francisco 49ers' current defensive coordinator was selected 5 picks after Mercedes Lewis.
Oh my god!
Mercedes Lewis was taken 2 picks before Joseph Addai.
Oh my god.
Yeah, Mercedes, those are names. Yeah, this just goes to show you that if you have the shine that you are a good blocking tight end, you have a job till you're 40. Just, guaranteed. And he's still good. He is still definitely good at that. So good for Mercedes Lewis. But the big story this week from the NFL, it was the week of the backup QB. I'm going to go in order of how surprising and / or how exciting each particular win was. So we're starting off with Geno Smith, who goes 20 for 24 for 195 yards and 2 touchdowns. The Seahawks very easily handle the Jaguars. No surprise there. But Geno got his first win since 2016. So good for him. I don't really care, though, Geno Smith. You're not good. I'm happy that he's getting a check still all these years later. So speaking of guys who have not been seen in a long time, Trevor Siemian showed up.
Oh my god.
So he did not start this particular game. Jameis goes down. Turns out that he tore his ACL, even though he was seen dancing on crutches in the locker room the game.
That fucking video.
It's so good. It is so good. But so Taysom Hill currently injured, so the other quarterback that the Saints have available is Trevor Siemian. Who has not played significant snaps since 2017. He started a game for the Jets in 2019, but he had 6 attempts before he got injured and had to get taken out. So this is his first touchdown since 2017 when the Broncos were still trying to make him happen. He didn't have a great game or anything, 16 for 29 for 159 yards and 1 touchdown. But he managed to, keep a weird Chiefs a weird Saints upset win nice and orderly. Saints 36, Buccaneers 27. So he manages to sort of hold on. So good for you, Trevor.
I was gonna say the ugliest goddamn delivery I've ever seen. Yeah. Jesus.
Trevor Siemian. Yeah. There was a moment there when he was with the Broncos that they were really trying to make him happen. Oh boy. Kevin White shows up in this game for the first time. Uh-huh. He appears on a stat G for the first time since 2018. Good for you, Kevin White. He had a catch for 38 yards. It was a good catch. I think I would give Geno Smith beating the Jags a 2 out of 10 on the weirdness scale, Trevor Siemian gets a full, like, 6 out of 10. Cooper Rush.
Oh, my God.
Cooper Rush is starting his first ever NFL game. He's bounced around as a backup for, like, 4 or 5 years now for some reason. But in his first ever start, I think I give this a solid 8 out of 10 weirdness. He goes 24 for 40 for 325 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 1 pick. The Cowboys win 20 to 16 over the Vikings. He leads the Cowboys on a crazy awesome game-winning drive. Good for you, Cooper Rush.
Did you see where basically, I think Mike Zimmer, and actually a lot of the Vikings players said that they didn't plan for him at all. Like, there was no game plan for him this week.
Man, Mike Zimmer, I do not think he's going to have that job in 2022. The Vikings almost lost to the Lions this year, and they just lost to Cooper Rush, making his first NFL start. He looked fine. Like, he didn't look brilliant or anything. Like, he looked like a backup quarterback, but 325 yards and a game-winning touchdown drive, pretty fucking good. Onwards to the last backup making his first start.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
This is a full 12 out of 10 on the weirdness scale. Mike White, who Cooper Rush beat out for a backup quarterback job once upon a time in Dallas. Mm-hmm. Mike White, oh Lord. He goes 37 for 45 for 405 yards and 3 touchdowns, 2 picks, neither of which are his fault. Both of the interceptions are total, like, weird tip drill plays in which he's not at fault at all.
He started 11-11 for 93 yards, and his 12th pass was intercepted off of Jamison Crowder's hand, and his 13th pass doinked off his running back's helmet. Just, I think, I want to say, too, before I get you going again, the Jets' game plan is the stupidest fucking thing I've ever seen. I've never seen a game plan this fucking simple work this fucking well against a team this good.
Yeah.
Okay. So they ran one concept probably about 20 times this game. They had a guy running a slant, and then the running back kind of went out into the flat. And Mike White loved to spam that route to the flat.
Yes,
that
he man did.
Oh, Jesus. How did this work?
Because the Bengals underestimated White Mike. That's what happened. Michael Carter, I think, had like 9 catches for 90-something yards or something ridiculous out of the backfield in this game.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like, Mike White had like the least impressive 405-yard game I've ever seen. So both those interceptions come out early. So the Bengals take a lead in the second quarter. Yeah, both those interceptions, as I'm looking at it now, were in the first quarter. So the Bengals hop out to a 17-7 lead late in the second, 17-14 at half.
They should have given that fucking catch to that guy.
Yes, they should have. Keelan Cole is like only good for like one ridiculous circus catch a year. He has a very strange NFL career, but we don't have to dwell on that. Anyway, after halftime, Mike White leads them on 4 drives, and it's 2 field goal drives and 2 touchdown drives. Cincinnati's up 31-20 at one point after a long drive by Joe Burrow. Mike White takes him on an 8-play, 75-yard drive in less than 3 minutes to make it 31-26. And then Joe Burrow immediately coughs it up on an interception that's tipped, brought down by Shaq Lawson. Shout out Shaq, by the way, former Buffalo Bill that I really like. And then Mike White answers with an immediate touchdown, and then he catches the Philly special 2-point conversion to make it 34-31, and that's kind of where the game ends. The Bengals punt the ball to the Jets while losing with 2 minutes left in the game, and the Jets do not let him get it back. So
You know what's funny? They actually stopped him on the 3rd and 11, but there was an unnecessary roughness call that basically iced the game.
Yeah. So the Jets knock off the 1-seed Bengals. No other team in the AFC East currently has a win against a team with a winning record, and the Jets have 2.
Uh-huh.
The
The 2-5 Jets are 0-5 against teams with losing records and 2-0 against teams with winning records. So what I'm saying is that the Bills are fucked. The Bills are totally gonna lose both those games.
I am going to mention, okay, I know it's not in the script, but I'm going to mention the fucking Titans. This game, my emotions were just all over the place. This team will kill me. Carson Wentz going down in the fucking end zone, and a guy like just catching the ball in the end zone off of this fucking pass that he like tries to throw off his back foot, and I think we win the game. And then they go on a fucking drive to tie it. Carson Wentz having the great underthrow it to your guy and have a pass interference call offense that seems to work for him quite well.
Mm-hmm.
We eventually did win. Carson Wentz is terrible. And Derrick Henry is out for the year. Kill me. We're the number one seed in the AFC, and I am still fucking depressed.
Yeah, the AFC's in a really weird spot. The Titans don't have Derrick Henry, and they still have, along with the Bills, just an absurdly easy schedule. So I think both these teams are going to walk to having really good records, but I don't know how it's going to go in the playoffs, because both these teams have shown ample weirdness so far this year.
Uh-huh.
But I have two more Mike White facts that I just got to throw at you. First of all, he's the second player to throw for 400 yards in his first start other than Cam Newton, who did it for the first time back in 2011. So Mike White is a future NFL MVP. But second of all, this factoid was going around. Katie, do you know who the last Jets quarterback to throw for 400 yards in a start is?
Ken O'Brien.
It's not quite that dire.
Chad Pennington?
It's more dire than that. So it's Vinny Testaverde in 2000.
Fucking Christ.
So Jesus. So I want you to guess how many Jets starting quarterbacks have played, have started a game since then and failed to get 400 yards. I just want you to guess the number.
I'm going to say 10.
Well, it's 16. And I'm going to list them really quick along with the amount of games they started, so chances they had to get 400 yards. Chad Pennington, 61 starts. Quincy Carter, 3. Brooks Bollinger, 9. Kellen Clemens, 9. Brett Favre, 16. Mark Sanchez, 62. Greg McElroy, 1. Geno Smith, 30. Michael Vick, 3. Brian Fitzpatrick, 27. Bryce Smith, 7. Josh McCown, 16. Sam Darnold, 38. Luke Falk, 2. Trevor Siemian, 1. Zach Wilson, 6. Mike White only needed one bite at that apple to get it done. So good for Mike White. So one last NFL thing that I want to talk about is, as we are recording, it is the date of the NFL trade deadline. Yesterday, the Rams send a second and third round pick to the Broncos for Von Miller. I think the Rams right now have 3 draft picks in the upcoming draft, and it's a conditional, it's a compensatory third round pick. So that's like one of those picks that's at the end of the third round. And then they have a 5 and a 7. All the rest of them have been dealt. I really appreciate how the Rams build their team. So the only other trade that's taken place as of noon on Tuesday is that the Steelers have sent Melvin Ingram to the Chiefs for a 6th-round pick. I don't know why more teams weren't in on this. Melvin Ingram's still really good. I will say, though, according to Chris Trapasso of CBS Sports, he's kind of a like local Buffalo guy, the Washington football team is currently trying to work out a deal to acquire Mitch Trubisky.
Oh my God.
So that may or may not happen. We will see. Who knows if that's actually going to happen. Apparently the Bills and Cowboys also called the Broncos about Von Miller. That doesn't surprise me. I think the Bills are going to at least try to buy. I don't know if they're actually going to pull it off. And also, who knows if Deshaun Watson's going to get fucking traded today. I don't think he will. Maybe I'm going to eat shit for saying that in a public forum, knowing that it's going to go up tomorrow. But I want Dolphins fans to be miserable, and the only cope they have right now is that they might get Watson. So, yeah. By the time that this comes out,
Mitch Trubisky might be a Washington football team member. That kind of makes me sad. I feel like Mitch and Josh kind of, like, really go well together. A trade came in literally 8 minutes ago. This is from Ian Rappaport. The Texans are trading young pass rusher Charles Omenihu to the 49ers in exchange for a late rounder. Charles Omenihu's a pretty interesting young player. So I like to see him going to a better run team. So with that concludes our NFL bit. And we have our normal preview segment. I had an idea for this week just to kind of mix things up that we would each pick one college game and one NFL game. You know, just to add a little variety. Yeah. Variety is the spice of life. And I'm using my college pick to shout out that midweek Maction begins this week.
Yes!
Hell yes! So there are 5 midweek MAC games. Love that. But most of them are not brilliant. If I had to pick one to watch, I would say you should watch Northern Illinois at Kent State. Northern Illinois is surprisingly pretty good. So I like that for them.
And Kent State has a pro prospect too that you could watch. I mean, he's not a good pro prospect, but you could watch him.
I was about to say, like, is he still a pro prospect?
I mean, have you seen the fucking draft class this year?
That's very true. It feels like Dustin Crum had more shine like 2 years ago than he does now. But Kent State's quarterback might end up, you know, someone might end up using a draft pick on him at some point. And Northern Illinois is just a cool, weird, unexpectedly good team. So that should at least be entertaining. My NFL pick is going to be Browns at Bengals at 1 p.m. I kind of want the Bengals to just execute the Browns at this point, just like bury them. I
feel like this game is going to have something stupid happen.
Definitely, and I don't know which way it's going to go. FPI favors the Bengals by just a hair. FPI gives the Bengals a 52.8% chance of the win. I don't know. The Bengals have the better quarterback. I hope that's not controversial to say. I think their loss to the Jets was pretty fluky, kind of in the same way that the Titans loss to the Jets was. So I think I'm still reasonably in on the Bengals, even though I'm less sure than I was last week that they'll make the playoffs. Anyway, Katie, what are your picks?
So my college pick, there are some decent games, but I think my college game I kind of want to watch is number 16 UTSA at UTEP, 10:15 p.m. on ESPN2. UTEP's defense has played lights out this year, but they did take a pretty, I don't want to say a bad loss to Florida Atlantic, but Florida Atlantic's pretty good. UTSA is undefeated. These two are technically in-state rivals. The problem with UTSA being a program that's only a decade old is they probably haven't had enough time to form actual rivalries. And I think the other fun thing is, too, just not even as a part of this game, Jeff Traylor getting a 10-year, $28 million deal. That's I don't know where they found that money, but they found it somewhere. And then my pro game is going to be Green Bay at Kansas City, 4:25 p.m. on Fox. My taste for this game is probably dulled a little bit just because of Kansas City struggles, but I want to see, I think the potential is still there. Green Bay did utilize a lot of too high coverage last week, and Kansas City struggles against that, and I want to see, does Kansas City come out and figure out some schematic way to get Mahomes going a little bit better? And I just want to see Aaron Rodgers eat against this fucking Kansas City defense. That's my pick. I don't know if it'll be competitive, but I think it could be. So that's my pick.
I am certainly not willing to count out the Chiefs at any point. So with that, we've reached the end of our normal show. You can find me on Twitter at DirtbagQueer. I really posted some outlandish shit during the Bills game this week because it was killing me. But that's okay.
I have very strong emotions about football on occasion. Katie, where can the people find you?
I am at Cates of Heaven on Twitter. There was no Vols game this week, and quite frankly, I didn't really feel like sharing my thoughts much. During the weekend, I do a lot of football posting, and during the week, I do a lot of shit posting. So if you're into that, follow me.
Yeah. You can follow the show account at Tuck Rule Pod for late night monkey related tweets from Katie.
I will neither confirm nor deny that I was going to make a graphic of a monkey in like our cover art style.
Holy shit, that would man, that would really be something. Oh boy. You can also, if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, why don't you give us a 5-star review? Again, it's the only rating you can give us, and it's the rating we have, because it's the only rating you can give us. I have decided to do a thing where I will read out reviews that we get, and we got a fourth one.
Oh no, I've already read.
Okay, you have? Okay. This is from my good buddy Devlin. Hey Devlin, I'm still gonna read it out. Man, I hate Tennessee because first of all, it's Tennessee, and I just hate him because they low down, they dirty, they some snitches, and I hate Philip Fulmer. I hate their colors. I'm not a dog person. I just hate Tennessee, man. I hate Neyland Stadium. It looks like a garbage truck worker convention, and I hate all their quarterbacks. I just hate Tennessee, man. Their colors remind me of It's not that orange. I hate Tennessee more than I hate Auburn. I just dislike Auburn. I hate Tennessee. See, Tennessee's colors, it's that throw-up orange. It's not that orange you can sit with. It's that puke inside of a pumpkin orange that... And I don't like pumpkins. So I just really don't like Tennessee, man. I can't stress that enough. And they losers. They sore losers because they not Alabama. And I hate Tennessee, man. P.S. Tuck Rule is extremely good, and you should absolutely listen every Wednesday when you do your dishes before work. Thank you, loyal listener, for making me put Katie through that live. I love that video. It's truly a work of art. I constantly think about garbage truck worker convention as like,
I swear to God,
it's so good. It is so good. Anyway, that is certainly enough nonsense for one week. Katie, why don't you get us out of here?
Me. Josh Heupel eats Bussy.
Josh Heupel does eat Bussy.